Welcome to Radical Love, a foster parenting podcast. I'm Corey Hazabeard, and we're welcomed by our first ever guest on Radical Love. And we are so excited, and we cannot have had a better guest for our first guest ever. We have Brittany Cover. She is a political analyst, a contributor to The Federalist, and a foster parent. Did I miss anything there?
No, I think that's about it.
Awesome.
And dog rescuer.
Oh, dog rescuer.
I'm a big in the dog rescue.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're not the first nor the last person that has foster kids and foster dogs. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So just dive right into it. What
okay.
had you interested in becoming a foster parent? This is a journey that not a lot of people go down. So what got you down that path?
So I've always had a heart for adoption. I've always had a heart for the hurting, I guess. And so that was always kind of the beginning. And I've always felt that it is, you know, if not me, then who else will do it? And so I've always been really passionate. I mean, even in elementary school, with the special education wing of our school, I volunteered in the fourth grade. Like anything that was a thing that I could sign up for to volunteer or be a part of, I did it. I tutored in Skid Row once a week when I was in college. Anything that I could do was always something that I was very passionate about. And so it was always part of my life plan to adopt. I strangely only knew one foster child growing up. I didn't have a lot of interactions. And I think that's in part because I grew up in a really affluent area. And so people just weren't, it wasn't, I didn't know friends that were being removed from their homes. And I didn't know anybody that was taking anybody in. If anybody was adopting, it was a private adoption. And so it wasn't until later, I learned more. And then my best friend became a foster parent about 5 years ago. And then that really just kind of lit a fire under me to really become active and start the journey to become, I always hate it when they call it a journey, but it's kind of the most apt description for it at times, the journey of becoming a foster parent.
Did you have to convince anybody or your spouse to?
You know, he wasn't as, well, he's always kind of been along for the ride with me. I mean, it was, oh, hey, let's rescue one dog. And then, you know, less than a year later, it's, hey, let's get a second one. And, you know, I always am kind of, you know, not really dragging him along, but I'm always a little bit of a head and feeling called to do these sorts of things. But thankfully, I know you don't get too religious on this podcast, but I mean, it was something that I really feel that the Lord was putting on his heart too. It just wasn't necessarily at the same time.
In the state of Tennessee, where we are, we go through a process called PATH, which is training parents as tender healers. And I don't know, that's the training.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know what ours is.
I listened to your podcast about it, and then I went and looked at it, and now I'm blanking on what it's called. We did not do PATH.
Okay.
We did, oh my gosh, I'm going to remember it the second we stop having this conversation.
That's okay.
Just going to grind my gears. It'll probably come to me. But no, we did a different program. And actually, your guys' system is way more intensive than Virginia's is. Yeah. And it's funny because they all thought at our, because we don't have options, right? We only have the state-run program. So when you guys were talking about how you didn't really click and you got to shop, I was getting so jealous. I mean, I love my social worker. I love the ladies that I work with, but there is such a luxury in being able to kind of choose where you're in community as you're kind of going through this process.
Absolutely. Our caseworker, I think he has 30 caseloads as of today.
Wow.
And they're supposed to have about 12. So yeah, it's I can't imagine not having the third party. So tell me about what it was like to go through training since you had a different situation than we did.
It was good. It was once a week for 3 hours for 10 weeks. So we did 30 hours and we spread it across 10 weeks. And it was interesting. A lot of it was outdated and it was always really interesting because they'd always show these videos that were probably older than I am. And they would say, well, this has changed and this has changed, but the sentiment's really the same. And then we would look at each other and go, no, it's not. Like, these are so odd. And a lot of them are very culturally inappropriate now. We were just kind of watching and kind of horrified. And we were like, okay, like, I get it that you're trying to most appropriately use your funds. And a lot of this, as with any form of parenting, is experiential. You learn on the job. But it was very humorous at times. A lot of it seemed, and I have a lot of experience with kids, so a lot of it seemed very redundant, especially for me. But for someone that wasn't in my shoes, I can understand how they would be able to gain a lot from the process.
Well, that's good to know that it was just as equally uncomfortable for us, because a lot of the same stuff, a lot of the same type of videos, same type of movies or and things like that that they have you do is very awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And a lot of like reframing, like, oh yeah, I know it says this and it does this, but this is the real lesson that needs to be learned by watching this.
Right.
So that problem crosses state lines. That's good to know. So it was 10 weeks, 3 hours a class. And
right.
So how long did you have to wait till you had your first placement?
3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Which for me actually felt like an eternity, because Virginia only does it on a county by county basis. So you only get children that are placed in your county in care. And our county only has about 100 kids in care. So there aren't that many children that, you know, coming in consistently as far, because my best friend who I referenced earlier, she does it in the Kansas City, Missouri region. And so there are 3,000 kids in her universe, whereas we only have 100. So everyone that I had talked to, and then all my, cause I grew up and I went to college in California and I went to a Bible college, and I have a lot of friends who are foster parents that I went to school with. And they're all saying, oh, before you complete everything, they're going to be rushing everything because they're going to be getting a kid to you. And I'm going, is there something wrong with us? Are we defective that we have to wait 3 weeks to get a placement? But we did. We got the call, and I think everybody has the same reaction the first time you get that call. Your heart is racing. Like, everything just kind of stops. Your ears start to ring a little bit, and you don't really focus on what they're saying. You're just trying to kind of, I don't know, stay standing. So yeah, we got a call at about 9 p.m. that there was a sibling set. It was a 90% chance they were going to be taken into care.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
What kind of thought process? What happened? So that's 9 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
Walk me through what that was like.
So then they called. So on the phone, they said that they would give us, that the social workers would give us a call when CPS had kind of cleared everything and processed all of the paperwork. And so they said that would take about an hour. We never got a call back. And a little after midnight, and we just kept staying up. We're like, what are we supposed to do? So we just kept, I don't know, going through our DVR and just watching some TV while we waited. And then all of a sudden, our living room is right in front of our driveway, and we saw headlights in our driveway. And so we just immediately crated the dogs, and we're like, okay, this is it. Like, I guess this is how it's happening. So yeah, we became instant parents.
So they pull up in the driveway.
Yes.
Do you know age, gender, anything?
I had been told 18 months and 3 years.
Wow.
That was incorrect. It was, 22 months. They weren't that far off. It was 22 months and then almost four.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had dirty little jammies on, and they had brand new shoes that were each like two sizes too big for them. Mm-hmm. And little decorated pillowcases that somebody had donated. That had some just essentials in it for them, and then Happy Meals, because they hadn't eaten in almost 48 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me, what emotionally are you going through when you saw your kids for the first time?
Shock. Well, it was such a journey. And one of the things that they talked to us about in our training was that there would be cross-cultural placements, but ideally they were going to try and place with the same cultures so that it was an easier transition for the children. And then our children walked out of the car, and they were these two beautiful African-American children. So not only did we become instant parents, we became a transracial family just right off the bat.
Wow.
So it was a lot to kind of process, like, okay, you know, all of a sudden, all these things, like, am I going to be enough for them? Are they scared? Like, how many white people have they interacted with in their life? Is this completely uncomfortable for them? All those things just start racing through your head. And you just kind of got to take a deep breath and just realize that love is universal, and love is what these kids need. And the process of loving them starts to right a lot of the wrongs.
Wow. That's just, that's a moving story.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to ask, is what role does love play in your home?
And in your... Everything. I mean, I think every parent says this to their children, you know, how much do I love you? So much. And we always say, and our little guy was completely nonverbal when he came to us. So he only says much, he goes much. And I think it's really hard too, because with us, I don't know how your case is going, but ours is a concurrent case. So there's a chance that they could be returned to their mom or placed with a family member at any point. And so you really have to straddle that line of letting them know that you love them unconditionally, but not putting them in a position where they're completely broken when they leave you and their whole world is turned upside down, because you don't know if their bio parents are going to want to have you interact down the road. And so you really have to kind of thread that needle, because you don't want them to suffer another loss, yet you want to completely protect them and heal them while you're their parent. It's definitely a tough one.
How do you personally take, and your husband take on, the vulnerability of them moving out? I mean, like I'll say from a personal experience, like we are in the exact same spot. At any moment, our kids could transition back to their biological family, but we love them as much as we possibly can.
Right.
So what in your own, the reason why I ask this is because it feels like a lot of people standing on the outside of foster parenting are always like, I can't do that. I can't love a kid and then send them back home to their biological family. So what kind of thought process, what motivates you through that?
So I've touched on this before. I wrote a piece for the Federalists and I addressed this, because it's always the first thing that someone says to me is, oh, I could never do that. I would get too attached. And I think the most important thing to remember is, as with all sorts of parenting, it's not about you, it's about them. And these kids deserve someone who will get attached to them. For the majority of their lives, they've dealt with people that either can't, won't, or aren't appropriately attached to them. And you could be the first opportunity that they learn how to properly attach, how to properly love, how to have an appropriate emotional relationship. And you saying that you would get too attached is actually the very reason that you should do foster care. Because you have to be able to, we can take the hurt, right? We can always take the hit. When you tell the story of your life, there are a lot of hurts that are mixed in there. What's one more? and why not it be something that benefits a child in an amazing and powerful way?
That's beautiful. So when you became a transracial family,
yes,
instantly, I mean, didn't,
yes.
I mean, what intentional decisions are you making now based on, you know, trying to bridge a culture gap?
Thankfully, one of my best girlfriends is African American, and we have a very diverse church, so it's kind of been seamless in a lot of ways, as seamless as it can be, I guess, for a transracial family.
Right.
A lot of their friends, they interact with a lot of other African American children. I made a conscious effort when we were preparing to get African American dolls and Latina dolls, just to kind of have a more diverse thing, so that not everything was blonde-haired and blue-eyed, as so many of the products are.
Just kind of walk me through, what is an average day like for you as a foster parent?
Oh, man. So for me, we make a lot of sacrifices, and I stay at home. I write a little on the side. But really, I don't know how I could work with the amount of people that are coming in and out of my house on any given day. We have a whiteboard on our fridge and there are a million appointments. I was listening to you guys discuss this on an earlier podcast as well, and it rang very true to me. So because we had a nonverbal son, thankfully my degree is in education, so we've been able to process a lot of that on our own. But a lot of the appointments I have to make is with the hope that their biological mom will be able to come. And so I kind of have to go through a lot of these motions and schedule things that I might not necessarily need, but they're tools that will help her in the event that they get returned home. But yeah, lots of our foster daughter has some emotional struggles, and so she has at least 5 hours a week of in-home intensive therapy. So between our CASA and our social worker and our GAL and, you know, the occupational therapists and the speech pathologist and the therapists, like, it was funny because they they had us sign our foster daughter up for Head Start, and they're part of the thing was we'll have to do a home inspection. I'm like, come on in, like everybody else has been over to our house.
Are you like us when the first time we had people over and they inspect you, it's clean as can be, but by the third or fourth week, you're just like, okay, you have to see how we live day to day.
I am a little neurotic about that. I actually still clean. I still do it all the time.
We try. We have like a baseline that we try to continue, but every now and then it's just like,
I will say it's gotten to the point where a lot of things get thrown in the master bedroom and then that door gets closed and then everything else is fair game.
We have definitely done that.
Yeah.
So I completely understand.
Yeah.
So how did you break the news to your family at large that you were going to be a foster parent, and then how did you broach the transracial family stuff as well?
It was honestly very, very simple with both sides of our family. I had told my mom pretty soon after we got married that we were, and she had known I always wanted to adopt. She just didn't know, I think, that we had wanted to adopt through foster care. So I had told her that that was, and then it's a lot of explaining because there is a lot of confusion about how the foster care system works. So there's a lot of questions. Well, can I talk to them? What are they allowed to call me? You start to go through kind of the litany, and they were really great. And when we got a placement, they never, like, race was never a question. It was never an issue. Now the only thing problem I have is that my mom, even though she's in Southern California, which is where I'm from, she's so attached that she sends like toys in the mail all the time. And I have to get her to kind of pump the brakes on that. But no, my dad came and stayed out with us for a week and just fell madly in love with them. They're darling children. And my in-laws babysit for us all the time. So it's never really been an issue. They've been very loving and wonderful.
That's great. So what are some of the biggest misconceptions people have that are on the outside of foster parenting?
That we're doing it for the money.
I think that was going to be the original name for this podcast, was doing it for the money, but we decided to change it the last second.
Yeah, the like 5 cents an hour or something that it boils down to. I think that some of the misconceptions are true. So they're not really misconceptions at all. But I think part of the reason that some of the issues in the foster care system exist is because not enough good people are stepping up to the job. I feel like it would be so much easier. And when I do meet another foster parent who's very similar to myself, I'm always so relieved, and it makes the load so much lighter to be understood. And they actually will help you navigate the system, and you know, you can kind of bond together sometimes and get things taken care of. But the thing is not enough good people are really stepping up to this calling because they're afraid of what it will do to them. Meanwhile, these kids are languishing in the system, and it's just sad. So I think that's why I'm super passionate about people, especially millennials. It's another term I hate, but everyone knows what it means. And I technically am one. I'm right on the cusp.
We are in the exact same spot. We are some of the oldest millennials.
Yes, exactly. So, but my thing is that millennials especially, and my husband and I do our college group, young adult ministry at our church. And the thing that I've noticed in working with young adults and people of my generation is that we have such big hearts. Mm. And a lot of times they just don't quite know what to do with it. So they just kind of, it's so easy to just send money somewhere to do something, but it's another thing to be the hands and the feet that actually do it. And so I think I'm just really passionate about kind of giving people an avenue. And I think because so few people really know what the foster care system is, how it functions and what it's like, a lot of people are scared off without really knowing anything about it.
So if you could talk straight to one of these people that is thinking about becoming a foster parent and has questions or apprehensions, what would you tell them?
It's wonderful. It's awful. It's easy. It's hard. It's everything that traditional parenting is, but magnified, because there's so much more going on. And sometimes it's in a much shorter amount of time. But if you ever want to do something where you can really see the fruit of what you're doing, this is it. This is the service that you can do. It's really easy to just take a day to do a service project or to go on a week-long trip. And it's another thing to really open your home and share what you are blessed with and what you've worked hard for with someone else. But I would really encourage people to do that.
That's amazing. I just love that heart, that spirit, that is foster parents, or we need more foster parents. It's just so painfully obvious that we need more good foster parents, parents. And just to hear you say that, I really encourage anybody who's hearing this, and you can do it. You can do this, and you'll put an amazing love in someone's life that truly needs it. So if you could talk to yourself 5 years ago when you were just burgeoning on this journey, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, gosh. Okay, 5 years ago. Man, I would have, gosh, I was a staffer working on Capitol Hill 5 years ago. So that was like a lifetime ago, it feels like. I would say your life is so much fuller and has so much more meaning now than you ever could have imagined then. And sometimes you get caught up, and I've gotten caught up in this too, in feeling like I need to do something big, that if I am doing something on a national scale, that I am, and it can be done. I'm not saying that it can't be done. There are plenty of amazing organizations and groups out there, but I think there's something about doing it on just a community level, out of your home. I mean, it's so personal and wonderful.
So what is the biggest surprise of becoming a foster parent to you?
For me, it was how quickly they called me mom. That was very surprising to me. It was, I think, you know, anytime you're dealing with neglect, especially, they're just desperate to have a mom. And so when you're it, you're it. And we had tried Mr. Matt and Miss Brittany, and, you know, in our class, they had told us that, they said, like, you're really more of an aunt or an uncle is how they described it to us. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, no, you're bathing them, you're changing their diapers, you're feeding them, they're living under your roof, like your mom and dad. And it's confusing. And, you know, I think the hard part is, you know, it's confusing that for a time they have two moms and two dads. And I mean, in essence, they'll always have two moms and two dads, but it's, you know, it was almost instantaneous. I mean, it was within a week, and that was shocking to me.
So what happens inside you when they said mom for the first time?
I kind of looked over my shoulder to see if my mom had flown in or something. It was in the house. It was sweet. I mean, it's when you, for me, it was knowing that I was making an impact. I knew that my love was touching them when they called me mom. And so I knew that they were receiving it on some level. And I think that was kind of, it was like okay. They know that I care about them and that I love them.
The last question is how we end every podcast.
Yes.
So Brittany, what is making you a better foster parent?
It is an app called Voxer, and it's like a walkie-talkie. And I talk to my fellow foster mamas on it, and we just walkie-talkie back to each other in real time. And anytime that there's a victory or a struggle or just an, oh my gosh, I need to scream into my pillow, or if one more person walks through my front door, I'm going to lose my mind moment. Someone who totally gets where you're coming from is right there and can talk to you in an instant. And it's amazing. I love it.
That's great. That's the first app we've had, so I'm excited.
Oh, good. You're going to love it. You're going to get addicted to it, I promise.
For me, what's making me a better foster parent, I'm always addicted to music. I'm always listening to something. And there's a specific song this time. It's by this singer named Angel Olsen. And I think the song's called Shut Up, Kiss Me, Hold Me Tight, I think is what it's called. But she, in the bridge of the song, she has this refrain where she says, I could make it all disappear. You could feed me all of your fears. We would end all this pain right here. We could rewind all of those tears. I could take it all down to the floor. You don't have to feel it anymore. I love a love so real that it can't be ignored. Mm. And working with my kids on a day in and day out basis, I want to live a love that that rewinds all the tears and that comforts all the hurt and embraces them and their pain. And so in the midst of this rock song, this breakdown happens and she says this, and it just, this week has really motivated me through some hard things that we've gone through. And so Angel Olsen, Shut Up, Kiss Me, Hold Me Tight is what's making me a better foster parent. Brittany, thank you so much for being the
first ever
guest. Is there any way, if people wanted to reach out to you, how they could reach out to you?
I have a Twitter account, and it's @BCCOVR. So @BCCOVR. And yeah, that's it.
That's great. Thank you so much. And
thank you again for having me.
I would highly suggest anybody who can read the Federalist article that she wrote, I'll link it in the podcast. It is a great read and a must read for all foster parents. Thank you very much, Brittany. And I hope we can have you back at some point. It was so much fun talking to you.
Thanks, you too.
This has been Radical Love, where we say radical love demands radical actions.